Hi, and welcome to episode 27 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars and Stalkerville, and joining me for the first show of 2016 to give you nightmares are writer, artist, and creator of the superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man who eats green berets for breakfast is Tony Esmond.
You're right.
All right.
Hello.
That was all right, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does anyone get that reference that I just made then?
Commando.
Yes, good luck.
That was it.
What, do you have a problem with Commando, Tony?
Oh, here we go. Look, he's started on me already.
Start the year as you mean to go on. 2016 has only just begun. Hopefully you've all just got over a brilliant Christmas and New Year. Got loads of cool comics, books and superhero-themed underwear and washettes. I'm looking at Dan and Tony here. Well, yep. I'm not looking at them. This is audio.
Don't tell people that. Some people think we record in the same room.
That's true. I don't. Yeah. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
We might have said otherwise. Do you know
that's
what I mean?
True. Yeah. Stop touching me there, Dan.
Anyway. It's like when I said we should go on holiday together and you all ignored it.
Rightly so. Oh, it was to hedonism, so it was a bit dubious.
Yeah. I don't know what that is.
Oh, dear. Anyway, we got another brilliant small press guest to talk about their work and work processes and make you desperate to get their work, hopefully. This week, we're joined by a creator who has a growing legion of fans, not only for his brilliant commissions, sketchbooks and pinups, but also for his brain-meltingly awesome series and one of our favourites, Random Trials. It's Mr. Dean Beattie. Welcome to the show, Dean.
Hello. Hello. That's my country gent, hello.
Yeah, it worked. Yeah, it was good.
That's the classiest this show's been in quite some time.
Yeah. In other words, not at all.
Yeah, yeah. So are you surprised that the behind the scenes on this show is just as glamorous and professional as the actual show itself, Dean?
Yeah, it's pretty slick, yeah.
Yeah, how was the green room? Did you have all the items that you requested?
I didn't want any peanut M&Ms. There's six or seven bowls full in here, though.
The Viagra is Dan's, to be fair.
So yeah. The blue ones were a little kind of diamond shaped thing.
Yeah.
How long do they take to wear off? Do you know? I'm asking for a friend.
It depends how many you've taken, Tony. I mean, how many this person has taken?
I'll ask them. Four.
I would seek a doctor. I don't know. Dan, do you know?
I don't know what you're asking me. I've no idea.
Oh dear. Well, Tony, all I'd say is I would give it a good 24 hours and then.
I reckon, yeah, should be right, shouldn't I?
Yeah, if you're still alive, then.
Just keep me going through New Year.
If it starts turning black and smelly, probably go down the dot. I'd say if.
Sorry.
Oh dear God. Oh dear. Anyway, where were we? Ah, Dean. Dean's with us for the whole show, and we'll be talking about his work, his comic, his extravagant choice in men's perfume, and his chosen method of survival in a zombie apocalypse soon enough. But first, should we talk about what we've been reading? What do we want to talk about? Tony, you go first, my friend.
Yeah, we can talk about that. Did anyone get any comics for Christmas, by the way?
I did.
Yeah,
yeah, what did you get?
I got the graphic novel of Rumble, which
that's what I got. I got that too.
I got recommended it a couple of weeks ago, and I said on that show that I probably wasn't going to give it back to my workmate, and now I can because I have my own
good
copy.
That's good.
That's good. Yeah.
What do you do? Just throw it back at your partner and say, "I've already got this."
No. I was nice. She was like, "You haven't got it, have you?" And I told the truth.
Because
I didn't have it. I didn't have it. I couldn't honestly say that it was mine because it was stolen from someone else. So and I finished reading that again and loved it.
Oh, but, cool. What about you, Dan? Did you get your Viz annual in the end?
No, still not got it. I'd have to visit Amazon, I think.
Yeah.
Go to the enemy. But there you go. Look forward to a review of that popping up soon on the show.
Speaking of popping up, did you get any, Tony? Did you get?
I ended up getting a Frank Cho Masterworks.
Oh, really?
Oh, did you? Oh, nice one.
Oh, is that all you're going to say about it?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I got the Frank Cho Masterworks book. It's a shame a lot of the material inside it has already been printed in some of his other work. So, I was familiar with about like 75% of it, which is a shame. But there's a lot of kind of chat about like his work process, which is yeah, it's great, good book. And I've got a chunky 75 years of Marvel cover art, which is ace.
Oh, beautiful.
Nice. Yeah. 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 I got a thing by Wally Wood, which is good, a sort of classic sci-fi story thing. Yeah, no, it's a good year for comics, I think.
Nice. What about you, Dean? What did you get for Christmas?
I didn't get anything for Christmas.
No.
Oh, God.
No. We didn't really do Christmas, probably. We don't do Christmas anymore, just because it's kind of money.
So, of the three ghosts that visited you on Christmas Eve, which one did you like best?
No, well, I have got a present. It's kind of it's not books or anything like that. I going to conventions and things and just going on the internet, I end up buying loads and loads of art and prints and things like that. And I've got two drawers full at home of prints and original artwork. And it never goes up on the walls. And so I got two big pieces framed as a Christmas present. Because it costs more to frame it than it does to buy it in the first place.
It really does.
So, yeah, I did get a Christmas present, but it's not like a Christmas present because it's all grown up.
No. That sounds like a brilliant present, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Yeah, what were the pieces?
They were two Daniel Danger prints. I don't know if you know him at all.
Daniel
Danger? No, not familiar.
Daniel Danger, he's awesome. He does loads. He's done posters for the new Crimson Peak, recent Crimson Peak.
Okay.
So he does it all, the etchings, they're huge, and you actually need to go and just have a look.
I think I've seen the posters that you're talking about, actually, the Crimson Peak ones.
The green one with all the light through.
Of the house.
That's it, the interior of the house, and all the light coming down through windows in the roof and everything.
And that's one of the ones you got framed?
No, that's his work. But no, the two I got done were, one was a real panoramic one, it's all blue, and then there's little footprints in the snow, but there's no one walking. And then you look up, and there's a little white figure floating about 20 feet off the floor kind of thing, and it's this little floating figure's footprints in the snow beneath him. It's lovely. I can't describe it well enough.
I think you did pretty well.
Yeah.
It's nice enough to have framed and go on my wall.
Nice.
I get really worried as well putting things on the wall because I think the sun's going to get them.
Yeah, I'm like that. I move them around a bit because I think if you have something that's especially ink, it's going to fade a bit, isn't it? You know.
Yeah. So I've got UV glass put in them. So they're safe.
Right.
Are you being serious? UV glass?
UV glass, yeah. It costs a bit more, but I can now put them on the wall and not worry about the sun.
Blimey. Nice.
Yeah.
All right. I must think about that.
I don't do it very often, but when I do it properly.
That's his statement in life.
Yes. Yeah. Live by it. Do it properly now and then.
Yeah.
And in between times, just sit about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm good at that.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, so it sounds like we all had a lovely Christmas and New Year.
Yeah, doesn't do it. Not too bad.
That's all right.
Oh.
Yeah. We're all old, aren't we, now? So it's sort of, you know.
Yeah. Oh, God. This was going to be the first show 2016. Lively. Go on. Let's be joyous.
Yeah. Dan texted earlier saying, can we keep the energy up? That's it. Yeah. He did.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Let's keep the energy up. And he's the one that's like, well.
Because you were watching Ninja Warrior earlier, weren't you, Dan? To get your energy up.
I had to rewind it because the dude's name.
What was it again? What?
Kane Dick.
Oh, dear.
I saw this looked around at my wife and I was like, Virgin Remote, rewind. So let's listen to that again.
And she just went, throw up.
Was that the UK version of Ninja Warrior?
Yeah, the UK version.
Oh, dear. Yeah. I don't know.
This happened to be on.
Mm. Oh, yeah. A likely story.
Yeah, don't beeline for Ninja Warrior.
Oh, dear.
It's a living room to watch that.
As you can tell, folks, it may be 2016, but we're not going to be any more professional this year than we were last year.
God help us, yeah.
Yeah, but that's why you love us. That's why you tune in. So.
So professional this week.
I'm trying to be. I've got a beer on the go, so I'm all right.
Should we do comics then?
Let's do it, Tony. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's go for it.
Okay, I've got a couple this week, actually, sort of new ones to me that Actually, the pile's growing, actually. You know, we said, oh, convention season's over, and we had about a week of it slowing down and not getting anything sent through, and then suddenly it just sort of took off again. Yes, an anthology I've got called Radio On, and it's the second volume, so it's called Broadcast Number 2. It's got a wraparound cover by Daryl Ibbotson, and if you read the sort of, I'm going to call them liner notes, and you'll see why in a minute. It's based on Black Sabbath's song The Wizard, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, from the self-titled album, I think from like 1970 or something like that. And that kind of leads into something that is, I mean, the contents page isn't the contents page, it's a playlist. It's got some interesting stuff in it. Adam Fallows did something called Love is a Mixtape. I have to say that probably most of the people in this comic never recorded anything when, you know, tapes were coming out originally. But mixtapes are sort of a cool thing now. Is everyone aware of that?
Well, mixtapes used to be a big thing for me when I was growing up. Yeah, you listen to the top 40 and then you pause it.
Yeah.
I thought they'd had their day mixtapes, but obviously I'm
they have,
wrong.
Dan, they have.
unless you live somewhere in the area of Mare Street in London, and you attend some of the sort of arty festivals there, and you'll see like the DIY festivals and stuff, you see sort of mixtapes on the tables with illustrated sort of covers to them, you know, there's that sort of thing, that element to it. But anyway,
I think they're definitely coming back. I mean, like, for instance, Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, that's quite a famous mixtape, if you could call it that. It's a soundtrack.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. It's anyway, back to the comic.
Yes.
Our friend of the show, Sammy Boras, who I didn't realise was a lady till the other day, but she's done a story about walking home after a gig and listening to people talk about the gig and another gig that they've been to on the train, and her thinking, well, you don't understand that, then why aren't you talking about music and this sort of thing? You know, it's quite funny. There's Sam Zapardi, who's done a sort of text piece with illustrated text piece called Professor Valdemar's Final Experiment. Is Valdemar a Harry Potter character? I don't know. Is he?
Maybe in the Spanish translation. I don't know.
Right, okay. Emily Rose Lambert, who's done a lovely little piece called The Woodpecker Song, which is a sort of lots and lots of little panels about a Native American whittling a flute and there being a woodpecker local. And it's a nice, nice little thing. And then there's a character called the artist is called Oscillating Brow. Yeah, not sure about that, but...
that's quite a name.
That is quite a name. Yeah, yeah. I've got a feeling,
The first bit that appealed to me.
It did not. You're such a liar.
Do you like an oscillating brow?
I go out of my way to find them. Definitely.
Yeah. I don't think you can be christened oscillating, can you? I don't think it's actually.
You can be called anything these days.
You can't.
If people are named after fruit, then you can. You know, all bets are off.
Yeah, like, I'm going to call my next son Watford, because I think that's a nice first name.
Where's the tumbleweed?
There's a sort of, what looks like shapes within ice with writing over the top, which I'm not 100% sure about, but is pretty on the page, and it's by Jennifer Privat, and it's called The Devil's Snare. Don't really know that. There's more writing in her little blog, like biog, than there is in the piece, but that's acceptable. I think we can understand that. And then in the back cover is basically the contributors have chosen recommended records to play. It's a nice. I was
Did you listen to any of them?
Well, I knew some of them from years ago, but yeah, I mean, this unsurprisingly, Joanna Newsom, The Mountain Goats. Yeah, there's a few that weren't a surprise to me, and there's a couple that, oh, where'd that come from? I mean, British Sea Power's in there, Fuzz's in there, and then there's a Sabbath, you know, song in there. But, it's an exercise in a comic that, you know, an anthology comic that is probably about music in some way or other. Each strip has an element of music to it, perhaps apart from the last one, which I didn't quite grasp. And it's the second volume, Radio On. The cover is, it's a lovely little cover, sort of slightly abstract-y illustration of this song. I'm gonna be the old bloke and say it's a little too on the nose for me. It's a little too trying to be cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
Which takes away from the fact that a couple of the strips are really nice. The woodpecker strip by Emily Rose Lambert is lovely, and Sammy Boras' strip is really nice and very colourful, and probably for me the highlight of the book.
I know a lot of Sammy's work is very colourful.
Yeah. Nice. It's the inside cover is a picture of lots of radios and tape recorders and stuff like that, in a sort of abstracty patterned way, like a wallpaper effect to it, you know. I'd like to see where they go next, I think, is what I'm going to leave it at. I'm saying I'd like to see what the next volume looks like. This came out in August. It's £4. It's A5 sort of colour size.
So you check out the next volume.
I'm going to give the next one a go, yeah, yeah. I think it's got the right idea, but, you know, if you aim to be cool, often you're not, I think.
Yeah, this kind of, you are cool, you want. Yeah,
yeah.
This show says it all, doesn't it? Really?
Yeah. We do neither. Yeah.
They're unlikely to ever hear this, but if they were going to put together a music playlist, why don't you do something like on YouTube, save it as a playlist and then make like a QR code to it or something?
Can't you do like iTunes playlists or Spotify playlists? Isn't that a
thing now? Yeah, definitely.
So you could just point people in the direction of that, surely.
I'm not saying they're bad music. It's bad music. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of music in it I like the Mountain Goats. I love the Mountain Goats, but, you know, it's a little too... I don't know, I kind of, because I'm old, I look back on people who think that this music's cool, and I think, well, you know, okay.
Has it got any Phil Collins?
I wish it had, yeah. it's got...
No Sistio. Come on.
Are they looking for suggestions for the next volume, then?
If
they want to be popular, they need to tap into Phil.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I think you're right, yeah. Later Genesis, just before he left, yeah.
Well, I don't know. In the Air Tonight, it's a classic song. Hang on, is this the Phil Collins podcast? Dean, you've overtaken... you're a Phil Collins terrorist.
There's no Daphne and Celeste in it, which I was a bit shocked at.
So, Dan, what have you been reading?
Anyway, that's mine. You can get it from theanalogpress.co.uk. It's conceived and edited, which is an interesting phrase, by Rob Carter, and it's designed and co-edited by Matthew Dye and Beth Dowd. There you go.
Cool.
Nice. What about you, Dan?
I picked this comic up week before Christmas Eve. I popped up to Orbital and I went through the spinner of the small press stuff and this one jumped out. It's called The Hellion, issue one, written by Fergal Keenan and pencils and inks are by Katie Fleming and Triona Farrell, who's the colourist editor, and it's kind of superhero comic, really nice, bright, colourful. I'll read you a little blurb on the back. It says, Dublin needs a hero, someone brave, strong and intelligent. Sadly, all of those guys were busy elsewhere, so instead you get stuck with the Hellion, and it's kind of like a young man who's got I think like relatively basic superpowers like strength and agility stuff, and he tries to kind of fight crime and then raise his social media profile. But he's got like a Twitter profile he keeps on tweeting where he's beating up thugs and like a selfie with like hashtags. And it's kind of a theme through the book, kind of him trying to boost himself on social media. So like the credits page at the beginning looks like their version of Twitter, and the same with the last bit.
Okay.
The art's really nice. I would have a constructive criticism for it. And it's something I've seen in a couple of small press books. And every page is a bleed. There's hardly any gutters through it. And you would, maybe if you work on this digitally and then you had it printed, when it's on screen, you may think, oh, that looks fine. But when you get in press, when everything's taken to the edge of the page, it looks cramped. That really serves a purpose. And I'm not saying like it's a one size fits all, it's always going to be that way. But as a kind of rule of thumb, the kind of the gutters and the page. A bit of space around the outside.
They're there for a reason, aren't they?
It gives it like room to breathe, and it feels cramped at times.
It is a learning that I think a lot of like people, especially just starting out with comics, you have to bear in mind is what it's going to look like when it prints. You know, because
it's issue one for them, so like I can't. Obviously, they're going to learn as they kind of go along. Another small little point is the lettering. I think the balloons, sometimes, you know, when you have a balloon sitting on top of another one and you have like the line underneath that connects them, sometimes it's kind of very squashed together. But apart from that, it's absolutely really well put together. Couldn't recommend it enough.
Is it an English book or is it an American one?
It's Irish. It's set in Dublin. The artists and writers all yeah, Irish.
There's some great, there's some great small press creators over in Ireland. I know we've mentioned a few on the show before. So, and we'll have to get some on at some point.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely.
I was checking around some of the scene, and it's thriving. There's absolutely tons. So, yeah, it'd be a great little market to sort of get tapped into. You can check that out at, they haven't got a proper site yet, but if you go to facebook.com/TheHellionComics, they're posting all their updates and art stuff there. So check it out.
Oh, awesome. Splendid. Right, as for what I've got this week, on Boxing Day, the day after Christmas, I decided to go into town to do a little shop. Take my pocket money that I got for Christmas and treat myself to a couple of things. I know what you're thinking. Are you mad? And yes. Yes, I'm
thinking of a lot of things.
not here, Tony. Not now. Not like this. And I popped in at Waterstones and just browsing through their shelves, and I came across a book that I've been meaning to pick up for quite some time called Jaybird. It's by Finnish brothers, Laurie and Jacko Ahonen. This copy that I've got was published by Dark Horse, so it's available on Amazon, etc. It first came to my attention when Tom Ward of Merrick the Elephant Man, he put it on a list of books to look out for. I remember when we gave a shout out, you know, one of the many times we've asked the listeners, what do you recommend, you know, one of those sort of lists. Yeah. Jay Bird was one of them, and I had never heard of it. So I looked it up, saw it online, and there's like a 40-page preview, I think, that you can check out. And I looked at it, and I thought, right, I need this book in my life. So immediately, I wasn't aware that Dark Horse had printed it at that time. So I was just planning to get it online at one point. Tom, you're an absolute legend, my friend, because this book is truly special. And I would actually recommend it to anyone and everyone. I'll just tell you a little bit of the blurb. A very small and very scared little bird lives a lonely, isolated life in an immense, spooky old house with his infirm mother. Curious but terrified of what's out there, he's never been outside the house, and he never will if his mother has anything to say about it. Now, that's your basic premise, that's your basic setup. But it's a real dark, quirky sort of story. It's got a slight sort of Tim Burton-ish feel.
Yeah, it definitely has, doesn't it?
Yeah, because you checked out the preview, didn't you, Tony?
I think you can read like the first 30 pages online,
can't
you?
Yeah, and yeah. I think it's about 80 to 100 pages in total, the book. And it's an oversized hardcover. Well, I picked it up for £15 from Waterstones. So it's readily available, more available than I thought it was. It's one of the most beautiful looking books I've seen in a long time. It's almost a silent book as well. I mean, these are Finnish creators, and like, yes, it has been translated. There are bits of dialogue in it, but most of it is just tells on the actions and the story and the atmosphere of this little bird inside this house, and there's creepy things. I mean, the house is creepy enough as it is, but there's things going on outside. And they just tell the story so well. And the lonely hero character sort of builds up a small friendship with a spider, which happens to be in the house. Now, you say these little things, you think, oh, that sounds so sweet, so nice, so lovely, but there's a real dark undercurrent going through it. And it's got a wonderful twist in the tale, which totally turns the story on its head.
It's definitely got a sort of haunted house thing, isn't it?
It feels like a haunted house, but then it takes a few turns. It feels like there's supernatural elements, and there's, you know, very Hitchcockian in a way, if I could say it. You know, it's almost like a play because everything happens in this house, and they don't shy away from the artwork as well. You know, it starts immediately. You open up the first page, and the first few pages are like portraits, like big portraits on the wall, and the first six pages, you're just seeing that, and that's how they tie in the credits, the name of the book that is actually in one of the frames, and then page 5 and 6, you can see this little bird is dusting them all. You know, so immediately it feeds you into this story of, like, you know, and it doesn't stop from there on. There's no sort of inside cover that says this is a book. As soon as you open up the front cover, you're in it. And
he doesn't use a feather duster.
I'm not sure if he does. Yeah. Where did he get it from? So many questions. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but yeah, I highly recommend this book. I mean, it's a one sitting book as well. You can sit down and you will breeze through it. I mean, you could say it's because there's not loads of dialogue, but you truly get invested in the characters as well. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, quite twisted as well.
Yeah, look good. Yeah, definitely.
So, like I say, you can get it on Amazon, or you can pop in your Waterstones, but definitely look for Jaybird. We'll put it in the show notes, of course, because they've actually got a website where you can get it from as well, and check out the 40-page preview or whatever. And as soon as you see that preview, I'm sure you'll want to get it, because it is quite a special-looking book.
Right, cool.
So, there you go. Nice Dean, are you still there, my friend? he's been sitting...
No, I'm just thinking, after all that, how bad I am at reading comics.
No.
I had a go. I went into my little bookshelves and had a look, and counted 56 graphic novels that I've bought and haven't read yet.
Oh no! Wow. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
And
that you haven't read?
I haven't read them yet. No, I just buy them and put them on the shelf, and I love how they look on the shelf, and then I don't take them off the shelf.
I know exactly what you mean. I've got a few books on the shelf that I need to read. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there 56 of them?
No, I'm not. I'm not that insane. But
I did read a couple, though, knowing that this was happening. I say a couple, one. No, I read one Image graphic novel, Trees, Warren Ellis and Jason.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
I read that, first part of that, and...
Jason Howard is one of my favourite artists. It is Jason Howard, isn't it? Is it Jason
Yes.
Howard? Yeah. Yeah, one of my favourite artists. Yeah, amazing work on that.
That's basically how I buy comics and graphic novels. I pick them up, have a look inside, and if they don't look generic, I buy them.
Oh, really?
Right.
I don't really look at the story on what it's about. I just pick them up, and if they look pretty, I buy them.
Does that extend to the big two? Because I would say a lot of DC stuff can look a little bit generic. I mean, there are standout titles, of course.
Yeah,
I don't buy any DC. Well,
yeah, let's not be DC haters, but I read a few this week because my son gets Green Lantern books and stuff like that, and Teen Titans, and I thought, yeah. When you look at the credit box on a DC book at the moment, there's about 45 people in it.
Really?
Mm. Yeah, wow, okay. About four artists. And I was reading Sinestro, and I think it was about five artists per issue or something. Yeah.
It's like any company. When they have the good books, they have brilliant books, I think. But
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, Dean.
Yeah, sorry, mate, yeah.
Yeah.
I find it really hard to get invested in reading comics, just because kind of 5 or 6 pages in, I start thinking about the fact that I'm not writing my own.
Right.
I have to stop.
Not a bad way to be.
And I put them down. So I don't ever get very far, but I was on the train, so I managed to read this all the way through. And it is actually really good. So I'll probably buy the second part of that whenever it comes out. But I have no idea when the second part comes out, because I don't keep track. And there might be a second and a third part out already.
I think
you have to tell me.
I can't remember, because I bought in issues. I think it's up to about issue 8 or 9 or something like that. I'm going to guess. I can't really remember.
All right,
it's on my pull list, but it's very good.
It's the first 8. Yeah.
Right. Definitely. Oh, okay. Yeah. So it might be worth looking to go into the second arc. But yes, it's got a real lovely style to it. The art's lovely. Really nice.
Yeah. It's kind of a weird. Felt a little bit like District 9, because it's based on the idea that these big columns come down from space and just plant themselves in various places around the Earth.
Yeah.
Huge, great skyscraper-type columns. And they don't do anything.
And nobody knows what they're there for.
No. They're just dotted around. And it kind of affects the whole, there's all kinds of political unbalance and infighting, and different groups of people go and live underneath the shadow of these big tree column things, and then they start thinking they're going to communicate, and it's kind of weird. And there's about 4 or 5 little stories within the book that start interweaving, and you get the impression they're all going to start overlapping as it goes on.
But and then you get some sort of black flowers start growing around the base of one in the Arctic, don't they? And
that's it.
That turns into something, and then there's a little. Is it Brazil? I've got a feeling. Is it Brazil or somewhere that there's a little community of artists or something?
That's the one.
And then there's one in London, which I loved the way he drew it. London in the rain. It looked really great.
Yes. Where else? Got Italy. Oh, a research station in the Arctic or Antarctic.
That's a great little one. I really like that one.
I left this series around, I think it was around issue 3 or 4. Is that because it is quite a slow paced sort of story, isn't it? I guess.
Yeah, I think you kind of got to live with that with this book. I think things do happen, but you don't. It turns into a mystery by about issue 8. You begin to think you know where it's going. I think.
Mm.
You know.
Yeah.
I have to say, it's one of my favourite Image books at the moment.
Yeah. I just saw that volume 2 of Trees is available for pre-order and will be released on the 10th of March 2016. Oh, okay. So there you go.
Right.
Okay.
I'm in.
Well, that says a lot, though, doesn't it? I mean, if you
have to check that one out.
Yeah, after the first book, if you're prepared to get stuck into the second one.
Yeah, that's. It got a little bit of a sort of media spike, didn't it? Like, not that I'm into that sort of thing, but because it used a trans character, didn't it?
Oh yeah. Yeah,
that. But it was done well and it was done nicely, and yeah, there was nothing wrong with it. And but yeah, Ellis writes a great comic, I think. Mm,
yeah, I know that Jason Howard's artwork in that is very different to the stuff he did in The Astounding Wolfman and Dinosaur. What was the dinosaur? Super Dinosaur, which he,
yeah, it's really different, isn't it? Yeah, oh, I didn't put them together. Oh, okay,
yeah, because I love Astounding Wolfman and Super Dinosaurs, which he still does, I think, doesn't he? I think he's...
Sandy Wolfman's a Kirkman book, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Yeah. As is Super Dinosaur.
Oh, okay.
So,
right.
Yeah. So he.
That's not going anymore, is it? That Wolfman book.
No, ended, yeah. You know, there was four trades which I gobbled up as soon as I. Yeah, because it's definitely my kind of book. But yeah, he definitely he uses a scratchier kind of style for trees. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah. A lot of sort of. Yeah, like the rain's coming down, and it's not a lot of panel borders and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that Wolfman book in the same? What was the comic you talked about a couple of weeks ago, Dan?
Invincible.
It's in the same Invincible universe, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a shared universe. Yeah,
that was good. I like that.
Hmm.
Okay.
So there you go. Nice one. Trees. We haven't talked about that. Trees. Come out of nowhere.
Oh, can I do my. I've got a small press one as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Go for it.
Yeah, a small press. Just through Instagram, meeting various people on there and saying, oh, I like your art. And they say, oh, do you want to do an art swap and everything?
I'm familiar with this kind of thing.
Yeah, oh, that's nice. I like your stuff. Oh, I like yours as well. And then you just have a big love in and
end up swapping. That's the only time you'll ever hear Dean say that.
Yeah. Time for a love in, Tony.
Right, that's going on the end of the show. Yeah.
But a guy who's on Instagram as Ewan, whose name is Ewan McLaughlin, has sent me his book called Gun Viking. And it's awesome.
I just got to say, as soon as you put those two words together, immediately I want it.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
Gun Viking, to make a single word, that is a single word, right. Gun Viking. It's, it is fantastic as well, because his artwork looks kind of Glenn Fabry style art. It's all painted.
Oh, really?
It's a little bit looser. Well, quite a lot looser. So it's really energetic, but has that Fabry look to it. And it's just mental. It is a Viking running through the snow, shooting zombies with a giant machine gun, trying to track down this mountain king so he can kill him as well. It's mad. Yeah.
Is he a UK guy? Is he or?
Yeah.
I've not heard of that before. Yeah, that sounds good.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah. I think he's done maybe a little. I don't know if he's done any interior stuff, but I've seen some covers, I think, for Marcosia.
Oh, okay.
I think. But no, he should be doing a lot more, because this is his own book, but he seems to work so fast. His Instagram, he's got, someone will say, can you draw this? And all of a sudden there's a fully rendered painting within 10 minutes. It's just out. Similar to myself.
Yeah, very. Yeah.
Just substitute 10 minutes with about 6 weeks.
Yes. So you've got that as a collection, or was it like a webcomic or something like that?
He does it as a webcomic, and that is just the start of it. It's the first part he's printed, I think.
Okay. Right. Ah, awesome. Okay.
Just see it here, gun-viking.tumblr.com.
Oh, okay.
I totally see what you mean about the artwork. It looks beautiful.
It is, yes.
It's got a sort of a Glenn Fabry, if he had a baby with Simon Bisley kind of a...
That's it.
Yeah, imagine that.
Hmm. Yeah.
and then they gave that baby an axe.
Just pushed him out into the world and said, there you go, son, fend for yourself.
Yes.
Beautiful. That's awesome.
There's two things I've actually read recently.
So you've been giving us all this, so I haven't read much, and you give us two books. Well, we only need one.
Yeah. Well, I was just looking at that Gun Viking. That is lovely, mate. Really nice.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all over that. That's good.
Yeah. We'll definitely have to check more of that out. What a way to start 2016 with a Gun Viking. Yes.
Oh,
this is more like it. Anyway, Dean, Thank you for your reads for the week. But let's talk about your book, Random Trials. No one's heard of this book. We've never talked about it on the show. No one's mentioned this book. So Random Trials, you know the deal. Random Trials, pitch it to us.
Oh, okay. It's it's based on the idea that there's a shady international pharmaceutical company, and they've been testing experimental drugs on the general public without telling them. So when people are going to the doctor and they're having a tetanus injection, there's other things in that injection as well that you don't know about. And they're basically just seeing what happens. And issue one of Random Trials starts off by introducing this guy called Charlie, who's had a really, really bad reaction to one of these experimental drugs that's in an injection he's had. And it just follows him from there as he goes through a series of events where things start going wrong and things start blowing up and things coming out of his eyes. And then the pharmaceutical company recognise that he's gone a bit wrong and send some people to bring him in so they can do some tests on him. And it's just kind of a panic chase after that.
That's right. That's quite a way put it. Now, how do we... this book's got so much that we can talk about, I think, and we've all checked it out on the show. How on earth did you come up with this idea? Were you on pharmaceutical drugs at the time?
Last year I spent about 3 weeks off of pharmaceutical drugs.
This is when you came up with it.
Now, I worked for the NHS for about 5 years, and I was a coordinator of a ethical research committee. So had all doctors and researchers who wanted to do any kind of research which involved giving people drugs or doing anything like that had to come and get ethical approval from our committee kind of thing. So, I got the idea from there, really, that not everyone would bother coming and getting approval, and they would just go out and test it anyway.
Blimey. I never expected the idea to actually come from real life.
I've known you for years and I didn't know that, I have to say. No.
It's just that they have to go through so many hoops. They have to jump through so many hoops and approach so many different authorities and things to get approval to go ahead and test these drugs.
Yeah.
It's, there's got to be people out there who aren't bothering.
Yeah.
Slip it in there.
Just because people are terrible.
Really? People are terrible.
There's a film called The Facility. Have you seen that? And these people go to this kind of facility and they have like some drugs tested on them. And obviously one of them gets injected and he goes fucking berserk. And I prefer your take on it. But that whole idea of the kind of the drug trials on people is great. It's a really nice idea.
Did this film have people with handlebar moustaches in their pants?
No. Yeah, in Canal Street.
See, that's all just giving people moustaches and bald heads and everything is just cheating because it's easier to draw them.
Right, okay.
It's so true.
Give someone a plain face and they're just so much harder to make them look like themselves every time you draw them.
Right.
A big moustache and everyone knows who it is straight away. It is cheating. It's definitely cheating.
It's one of the things when I pick up a Batman book and like Batman and all these subsequent wards, they all look exactly the same. They all take their helmets or suits off and they're all black hair, immaculate faces. And it's like, there's no difference between these people.
At the end of the day, what is the difference actually between Superman and Bruce Wayne's faces? You know, there's very little, isn't there?
Isn't that thing where they swap jobs and that's the old golden age stuff?
I
don't think Charlie Cooper would be swapping jobs with anyone anytime soon.
No.
Is that your first comic, Dean? Is it? I've not.
Yeah, I did a few, two or three pages for anthologies before.
Right.
But this is the first thing I've written myself and then illustrated myself.
Cool.
Go on.
I did bits and pieces while I was at art college, but not anything I'd really share.
That was going to be my next question. What was your sort of training for art? Because you've got a very, if you don't mind me saying so, it's slightly caricaturish style.
Yeah.
How did that come about, dude?
I got into superheroes when I was about 15, so years and years ago. And I drew them at school, and my art teacher hated them.
Right.
And I didn't get into art college when I was 16, 17, because I really wanted to draw superheroes, and they weren't interested. So I went away and had a series of terrible office jobs.
Right.
Went back to art college when I was 30.
Wow.
And I just started drawing completely differently, and then realized that I still liked superheroes. So I started pairing this children's book style that I was developing, started pairing that back up with superheroes, and it just kind of this hybrid children's style came out. Yeah. Just like that.
Okay.
All right, Tommy Cooper.
Just like that.
So that's a big step at 30 to head back to college, isn't it?
Yeah. It was a bit scary.
Yeah.
But
it's just something you'd always wanted to do, so you thought I'm gonna crack on. Or was it the sort of banality of the day job that sort of forced you back?
It was the only opportunity I was ever going to have to do it. And right. I stupidly thought that going to art college was going to be the answer to everything. And that I was going to swap my office job, shuffling paper, I would do 3 or 4 years at art college, and suddenly I would come out the other end and I would have an art job, and I'd be drawing constantly. And I'd be sorted. I went in thinking that, basically.
Right.
And it didn't work.
Oh, shit.
So what sort of comics were you looking to back when you were in your teenage years? What were your favourites back then?
I started off with New Mutants. And I just used to copy them. Just sit there and copy pages and pages. And back then as well, I could copy one of his covers, and then I'd be able to draw it line for line for about 3 or 4 days afterwards. So I could sit in school and draw it, and everyone would think I was amazing, when actually I was just churning out something that was stored in my head for a couple of days.
I would pay good money to see a Deadpool comic from you, I've got to tell you.
Yeah.
I do think that's the only way I could fit into a mainstream comic, really, is a Strange Tales or Howard the Duck, or something that went weird.
Yeah. Well, who's the guy who did the Oz books? What's his name?
Scott Young.
Well, I mean, he fits in, doesn't he? And he's sort of transitioned to this quite strange style, isn't he?
Well, and also, he can make a living off his covers.
Yeah, that's true.
Quite easily.
I think he can fall back on those Oz books for a few years to come, can't he? I think.
Yeah.
Because they sold like gangbusters, didn't they? But I mean.
But Random Trial shows that there's a market for it, because it's absolutely ace. It's really good.
Yeah, really kind good.
The writing and the story and the art just marry perfectly. It's really, great. I mean, I remember seeing this stuff in years ago on Pencil Jack. I don't know if you still post on there.
I do now and then, yeah.
Okay.
It used to be the case, I'd go on Pencil Jack and post a picture and people tell you what's wrong with it, and then you go away and fix it, but... I don't have time anymore, really. I draw something, and then if there are mistakes in there, then they end up in print because I haven't got time to change anything. I find that if I do it and print it and get it out, and then I can see the mistakes myself, I'll just try not to make them next time. But if I changed everything and tried to get it all perfectly right every time, I'd never get anything in print.
So I started doing a webcomic, and you don't have time to put stuff on there, get feedback, change it, and then, you know what I mean? It's just the turnaround's too quick. So,
And my turnaround on Random Trials is really fast, because I put out one a year.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to ask, what your process is for Random Trials. So, I know you just do a Kickstarter to pay for printing, is that right?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. So from sort of point one of an issue, do you sketch it? You've got, if you don't mind me saying, a different kind of process, haven't you? Did you want to talk us through it?
It's a really long, drawn out process that I've got myself into this situation where I have to carry on doing it. But I pencil it all out, and then I paint over the pencils with really watery acrylics, and then I draw over the top of the acrylics with colour pencils. So that takes quite a while. And then I scan it all and put in a load of color treatments and everything in Photoshop, and then add shadows and other bits. It takes far too long. It's terrible. Right.
That's a long
time. It's perfect for doing... I mean, I love doing it for pinups and things like that. I do like the way they look, but doing it for 24 pages of a comic is something that I've got to carry on with until the end of this story, but I think I'll change the way I do it for any subsequent stories. I think maybe the cover will be painted, and then maybe dream sequences will be painted.
So the whole thing's been like a learning process, isn't it, from issue one, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I know what you mean. Once you've got that first issue out, because, I mean, some people might not care about it, but I don't know about you. For me, as soon as you've done issue one in a certain style, you want to keep it consistent, especially if it's a mini-series. Mm. How many issues is Random Trials going to be?
I'm going to tie up this opening story with 5.
Ah.
And so I've got another 2 to go.
Okay.
And then I think the characters can be used elsewhere, but this story arc is just going to be 5.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
And then trade it up, or are you going to put it into a trade, or...?
I'll probably put it in a trade, yeah. I mean, the other mistake that I made with it was with the lettering, because I lettered it myself and I'd never lettered anything before. So it's a bit big, the text.
Right, okay.
And if I went to trade, I'd want to re-letter the whole thing a bit smaller, I think.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
I think so, yeah.
Have you still got all the files where you've lettered it and it's all kind of, it's still editable, or...?
Yes.
Flattened artwork.
No, I've got it all. I'm really bad at saving things. It's why my computer fills up so quickly, because I'll save it as just a Photoshop of the art. Then I save another version with the lettering on it. Then I save a flat version. Then I save and I just end up with about 6 versions of everything.
I do the same.
And I can't. And I still can't work out where I can never find anything. And then you can tell I sent you the PDFs. The digital PDFs of the comics, they're all different sizes, and I'm useless at PDFs. I wish someone would just do it all for me. Just so, magic pixies.
So at what point did Random Trials become a thing? What made you think, because this is your first comic, so what made you think, right, this is the story I'm going to go with? Was it something that was bubbling away for ages and then you decided to develop it?
No, I did a few conventions without a comic. Well, I did maybe 2 years worth of conventions without a comic to my name.
Oh, right.
And I just started feeling bad that I didn't have anything.
What do you have, like prints and stuff? Did you? Or...
Yeah, it was all just prints and original drawings and things.
Right.
And just looking at other people's tables, I started thinking, well, if they can do it, I should be doing it as well. So yeah, it was kind of a kick up the arse looking at other people and what they were doing. And it just made me feel lazy. The fact that the whole comics community seems really fired up and the people constantly making things and being creative. And I felt lazy amongst them. So I felt compelled to do one.
Okay. We've never had that as an origin story before. No. You were sort of guilted into doing it.
I was. I was made to feel lazy by looking at other people.
Yeah, but you did the right thing. Do you know what I mean?
It's totally the right thing. I mean, this is one of the books that before the show, I didn't really know much about. And Tony talked about it. And as soon as I picked up the books, I finally got them from you at Leamington, I believe. Got the first 2 issues. And I was just on board, totally. I mean, I'm really surprised that this is your first time doing any of it, to be honest, because it's such a well put together book. It seems like everything is really well thought out. You may be thinking, well, it isn't, but the way the book comes across, you know, it seems like everything's in place, especially the characters. You've got such a brilliant lineup of characters.
Yeah.
I mean, how does someone, should we be worried that someone like you can come up with a character where their belly is full of little people that pop out and save their life, because that's one of the most unique characters I've ever seen.
that was really hard to it was really hard because I was sitting there and trying to think of characters and things that people could do that hadn't been in comics before.
Right.
And there didn't seem to be many things. And because Random Trials is all about, it's kind of human body evolution and the things that these drugs are making happen to human bodies. Mm. And the guy with the things that come out of his belly, they're white blood cells that have evolved to the point where they don't just protect his body internally and defend him from illness and everything. They actually come out externally and protect him from danger before it actually hits him.
Well, that's, I mean, I've seen that loads of times in comics before. I don't know about you. I think that's a very generic character there. Mm.
I thought I'd try and sneak him through. I find that probably the most fun part of the whole thing is coming up with characters. And it was annoying the fact that I had kind of 10 or 15 ideas for characters and I couldn't put them all into a 5-issue arc.
Yeah, because there is like a, I mean, with this basic setup, you know, pharmaceutical drugs that are in the public, you could do it for God knows how long, couldn't you? I mean, this could go on for ages. But you are narrowing it down to a motley crew of unique, I mean, never mind their powers, the characters themselves are just weird and wonderful. I mean, Charlie Cooper had me from the moment he said, I fucking love crisps. that was it. And that, you know, I know he's a fan favorite for people to draw anyway, from all the pinups you've got in the book.
Yes, I've been quite lucky with the pinups.
Yeah, do you have any, I mean, it's hard to say because obviously you've got more of the story to come. Do you have any personal favorite characters, or are there any characters that you love to draw or write more than others?
I like Snakebite quite a lot.
Definitely. I said that to you after issue one, didn't I? I think I said that's my favourite character so far.
Yeah, I could just see him going off on his own and there being a lot more to him. But not that I could explore within this little 5-story arc. So I think he'll probably get something on his own.
Mm.
At least some little... Oh, I was thinking maybe of doing some... like an anthology of Random Trials characters, and just giving them 2- and 3-page stories just to explore and expand each character.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the only way I can do it.
Yeah, he's for people who haven't read it, he's like Charlie's best mate, isn't he? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He's not affected by the drugs, is he? He's just a normal weirdo.
So. He is, yeah, he's just a country music fan.
He looks like a roadie or something like that, doesn't he? He's got a grizzled look about him, yeah.
I always think if they made it into a film, he'd be played by Bill Nighy.
Oh, amazing. This would be such a good film. This would be this would be such a crazy, over-the-top film.
But the characters feel like they have lives outside of the comic and of the pages. Yeah. You know, you can't say that for the stuff that kind of have come across, but that's definitely, you get the feeling with these ones.
Yeah. Yeah, I've said it on the show before, and I've said it to you, Dean, but my favourite bit is the dialogue, and... are we allowed to say Chav? I don't know if we are. Are we? Urban dialogue.
Well, you just have, Tony.
Yeah. The urban dialogue when they go to Robin. The moment I love this book is when he went, yeah, I don't know what you're saying, but I think I might be in trouble. And that moment I thought, yeah, spot on. Yeah.
Yeah. I do worry that people will think that I am just writing myself.
you hear that, you know, a lot of the best comics, I think if you don't put something of yourself into some of the characters...
Yeah.
Then it's just going to come across as fake, you know. I mean, do you walk about in your pants in the middle of the night looking for beer and crisps?
Well, yeah.
Exactly. Have you ever wondered if pickling juice has alcohol in it and whether you could drink it?
Yeah, so
we've all done that. No, I mean, never mind the art. Let's put the art to the side, because obviously you've got this brilliant style and, you know, all the work that goes into it. But writing a comic is a completely different matter. And so how did you go about tackling that? Did you just jump head straight into it? You know, how many drafts of this were there?
That's horrible. I did one draft, and then I hadn't really thought about working out how to put it into 22 or 24 pages. And how troublesome that would be. And it was an absolute nightmare the first time I did it. It was just a bit of a nightmare the second time, and just a plain nightmare the third time. But no, it's not something that I'm used to yet. I was trying to leave it so that you felt compelled to turn the page every single time you No, didn't like it. I do enjoy writing, but the process of putting it into comic book format is horrible. And I'm lucky in that I'm drawing it as well. So yeah. I don't have to be too specific with what I'm writing.
Right, yeah, I get you.
As I'm drawing it, it's kind of changing. Yeah, it's kind of changing anyway.
You don't have to translate it to another person, and you know, there's no middleman, is there?
Yeah.
I mean, if you decide halfway through a page, actually, if I draw it like this, it's going to work better. Then
exactly,
yeah.
And sometimes as well, if I write, oh, so and so looks like this, and they're saying this, then when I draw it, the look on his face that I've actually drawn is slightly different. But I love the way I've drawn it so much. I'll just change the story so I can keep the picture.
Yeah.
Which
is...
Yeah.
Do you write full script then? How do you write?
Yeah, I do. I write it out panel for panel and everything that's going to be said by everybody.
Really? Wow. Okay.
And then I draw it all kind of semi-close to that. But as I say, if I draw it and I end up drawing something that I like and I don't want to rub out, I'll change the story a little bit so that the picture works.
Do you change dialogue on page? Because I find myself, I do that quite a lot.
Mm. Yeah.
You kind of write something, when you're actually on the page, you think, oh, actually, this could kind
of
sharpen this up a little. Or...
Yeah, and you think, like you say, the page transition, and, you know, sometimes the dialogue has to change, isn't it? You know, just to make it work.
Mm.
Yeah, I found because I'm using a font that's slightly too big in print, that I had to chop out a load of language as well.
Right, okay.
So, you know, someone who's got three sentences in a bubble has suddenly got one.
Right.
But it's made me quite, you know, I chopped it quite a lot, but it was probably a good thing because it didn't allow me to ramble on.
Yeah.
So is it like a homemade font or kind of?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I tried it out with a few fonts off Blambot. And nothing seemed to work, and then someone said you should hand letter it, but I didn't fancy doing that either, so I did actually just make my own font from my handwriting.
Wow, that's impressive. So, yeah
awesome.
So till you got what you wanted, you've written that's great. Yeah, really good.
Making a font, I found that very hard. I tried it a couple of times and it comes out looking like a scrawl, a really bad kind of it took me a couple of times and I just didn't get anything that I liked. I didn't realise that was the case for yours, though. So good stuff. Because usually, it's like the minimum for print is like 6 point.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure how it works in comics because you're working larger and then shrinking it down.
Yeah, lettering at 400 DPI. I think it's 13.5 point or something I've used.
Okay.
Mm. It's massive. Right.
Yeah, that is big, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, 8's about average, isn't it? I think 8 or 9, I suppose. Yeah,
it's not. I think it's meant to be about 9.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. Oh, interesting.
When you lettered it though, did you use that chat? Was there anything you added in terms of like script? Because the characters have these wonderful little jokes they occasionally drop in. I mean, I mentioned on the previous one the cream bun line in issue 3, and that seems because that's not necessarily anything to do with the rest of the story. That's just a nice little joke that's in the sort of corner. It's almost like a visual joke. Really, at the bottom of the page. Was there anything like that that you added while you were lettering it, or was everything in the script?
No, that page was really difficult, I remember, because I'd actually left a load of room for text. And I don't know why, because there wasn't that much text going on the page. I hadn't written a lot of text. So I had to write it once I'd drawn it, and I toyed with all kinds of things about the two mercenary guys talking about one of the other one's sisters.
Yeah.
And I typed it all in there and everything, and it was all sitting on the page lovely, and I thought, no, it's just a bit wrong. I mean, the comic has got lots of wrong things in it, but that's a bit too... I don't want to be associated with that kind of wrongness.
Right,
so
okay.
I just replaced it with a cream bun joke.
That makes the cream bun joke oh so sweeter, the fact that it was replacement for something horrible.
Yeah, I just couldn't do it. It sat there for a long time. It sat there for a long time, but I thought if my mum and dad looked at the first issue, and I haven't shown them the second and third one because their eyebrows just kept going up and down on the first one. And I thought, if this third issue accidentally ended up in their hands, I couldn't have them read that page, and I don't want that.
Yeah.
That's, but it's little jokes outside as well. I mean, I laughed at the, having been to Canal Street, I can attest to the fact that quite a lot of the time people will rub out the C on it, on the street sign, if that makes sense to everyone listening.
Yeah.
And you include that, don't you? And I know I posted that panel up when I did the review, and a lot of people said, yeah, that's good, like that. But it's little jokes you don't always see, you know, it's got that sort of layer to it.
I do like putting little bits and pieces in there, just loads of extra detail, and when I draw it, I put in loads of detail, and sometimes it gets lost in the print.
Mm. I think. Right.
If I colour something particularly dark, and then when you have a comic printed, it always comes out a little bit darker
than
it's on the screen. So occasionally things will get lost.
Okay.
Have you? Is it available digitally?
It's a no.
Is that something you'd like to do, or something that because you're a technophobe, you're scared of?
You're annoyed by, yeah.
I'm not actually a technophobe. I'm just crap at it. I'm not scared of doing it. It's just the result is shit.
Once you've got it in a PDF and sticking it on Comixology, it's kind of you're pretty much there. Obviously, it's got to be the right size, but
right,
it doesn't take too much for a kind of push to get it on that.
The Comixology stuff, I mean, the trickiest bit is filling out the forms and all that jazz.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually uploading it, as long as you've got a decent PDF of it.
Okay.
They'll do the rest.
I felt a little bit guilty of Comixology in the fact that I do only put it out once a year. The fact that I'd upload one and people would buy it, and then they'd either forget about it in the space of a year, or they'd be thinking, well, I don't want to wait a year for another bloody comic. So I felt a little bit guilty about that, so I didn't want to put anything on there until I've done five.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I was going to say, you're talking about printing coming out a bit dark. You use a lot of white on your covers. I've got one of your 2015 art book in front of me, which has got a grand back, white background with Deadpool on it, but you used that on the cover of the first issue, didn't you? Quite a striking sort of red trail, almost. Did you want to talk through cover design? Have you got a sort of any tips or anything you could give us about that?
All I was thinking about was the fact that when I walk into a comic shop, what do I pick up personally?
Right.
And they do tend to be more graphic covers. If there's a Justice League scene with 15 characters all firing things at each other, and it's just one big mess, I don't even bother picking it up.
It's
something quite strong and graphic about a cover. I do tend to gravitate towards them, so it's obviously carried across into what I do myself.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of covers out there that are almost a little too much for the eye, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I agree, definitely, with a lot of characters on it. And it's not memorable. You know, because I don't really read previews, I try to avoid finding out what's going on because I like to be surprised. I remember what I've bought by the cover when I walk into a comic shop the following week, you know. And to have, I think a lot of, I hate to go back to being a DC hater because I'm not, but I think a lot of their covers are very samey sometimes for that reason. But when you talk about a sort of graphic cover, that's what drew me to the comic Trees. You know, it's very striking on each cover, you know. And that reminded me a little bit of your especially your first issue's cover. Really sort of highly designed an individual, you know?
Yeah, thank you. I've got away from it a little bit with the third one.
Right.
Just because I had an image prepared already. Well, that was one reason. I had an image prepared already that didn't have a white background. The other reason was that the comics with having so much white on the cover tend to get dirty and gross.
Get thumbprints and stuff
like that. Yeah, kind of selling them to people when they look secondhand already. And I didn't like that. So that's probably the last of the white ones that you'll see.
Right, okay. I'll
fill the white with another colour entirely, but there's hopefully still a bit graphic.
Yeah, it still works, yeah.
Well, issue 3's got it feels like a poster. Do you know what I mean? It could quite easy, you know, because you've got like the Motley Crue of your cast on the cover.
Mm.
You know. They all work well. I mean, even though it's not a white cover, it's not like it's a different book.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah,
I think he really kind of tapped into stuff with that kind of the real graphic covers, because I'll bring you back to that book I got earlier for Christmas. You can see where they've kind of, a lot of publishers moved on from that, well, especially Marvel, from kind of this big generic team shots on covers to stuff like the Hawkeye covers that are just kind of maybe two-tone colors.
Yeah. Yeah. And
a lot more graphic elements that they really kind of jump off the shelves.
Mm. And those old Daredevil covers with the little, was it the little red Daredevil jumping off a black skyscraper?
Yeah.
Plain white, things like that.
That was really good.
Just love them. I used to at the time when all those covers were coming out, I used to buy two copies of the comic and cut one up and put the covers in frames on the wall and things. But,
oh, cool.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
Blimey.
So what's the long eye then? What's the next for Random Trials? I know you've got a bit of a change in direction for a sort of middle of the year type one shot of you, or...?
Now the thing that I'll have it at London is it features Charlie Cooper as a character, but it's unrelated to Random Trials.
Oh, okay, right.
It's based on something that happens on the Pencil Jack website that we mentioned earlier with Dan. It's a little tournament they do once a year where different members of the website can put in their character into a fighting tournament, and you get drawn against someone else. And then you have to draw a series, you know, sequential artwork of your character fighting their character.
All right.
And you have to draw your character winning, and they do vice versa kind of thing.
Mm.
And it just goes through rounds where your character beats someone up, and then you move on to the next person, beat them up. And
how many pages are the fights?
Depending on how much time, you got a week to do it. So on some of them I did 5 pages, and others I just did 2.
So basically, this is going to be, it's a 24-page black and white fight fest, as you've called it in the back of the trials. So is this going to be like 3 or 4 fights of him just kicking the crap out of people?
Yes, it's I think there's 6 fights, but it was one of the things that frustrated me about the fact that I'm doing full painted work for Random Trials, is that it only took me, I think, 5 weeks to do a 24-page comic in black and white, and fully lettered and everything, completely finished. And I was just kind of slapping myself for that. But it is just, it's a series of, he turns up, some squid-faced guy is the first opponent, some squid-faced guy attacks him in the supermarket, and he ends up ripping his head off and taking it out in a shopping bag and things. It's real, top, nasty, kicking people in the nuts, ripping their heads off, burning them to death.
And it's just
down for 2 copies, I think.
Yeah, that's sort of ultra violence, and Dan Butcher's immediately bought pretty much your stock. Yeah, I mean, and it's just for the fun of it, isn't it, really?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just offensive. I'm going to do especially offensive covers for it, I've decided.
Amazing.
I'm going to do a little Charlie Cooper, black and white on the front, just on a print on everyone, with a blank speech bubble, and everyone who buys it is going to get a personal insult.
That is amazing. Brilliant.
Yeah. So that's why I'm looking forward to it, is I'm just going to write all kinds of filth on these books and the amount of people.
And if you're having a bad day, some people might get treated really badly.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
I'll be saving up my worst swears for Tony, though. Obviously.
Oh, I hope our table is near you, mate. I've got to tell you. You need to set a camera up on that shit. Do you know what I mean? Live stream it.
I'm gonna feel obliged to ask people's permission to write something nasty before I do, though. But I don't want to get hit.
That's an image of someone coming over with their son and say, "I'll buy this," and you writing "fuck off, ball bag." Piss flaps or something. You know, like,
your son looks like a fucking scrotum. Get away from my. Yeah.
Oh dear! I look forward to what you sign in each of our copies. I tell
it's
you,
it's like performance art.
Yeah, it's reader interaction.
So, is the whole thing going to be black and white then? Because I know it's black and white interiors, but you just mentioned black and white cover as well. So, is it just straight up black and white all over?
Yeah, I'm just going to do black and white interiors, black and white cover with a red title block, I think.
Right.
Okay.
So, just a splash, Just a splash of colour.
Are you going to kickstart that, Dean, or are you going to just self-fund?
I'll just self-fund that one. I won't get that many printed, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah. So you heard it here first.
So if you're at London, early. if you're at London Super Comic Con, go to Dean Beattie and get him to call you some sort of Ross and Bellend.
can you do requests? I'd like to request a couple, which I'll send you on email for Dave Stokes's and Mark Lamming's copies.
Yeah. I think they know. I think they've heard all of my swear words already. In all combinations.
Yeah. How much are you going to sell? Have you thought about price for that yet?
No, I was trying to work out whether to do it as an A5 or an A4. So it would be dependent on
that. Yeah, that makes a big difference, doesn't it, really?
I'm looking forward to that. That'd be good.
A4 might be. I think I'm favouring A4 at the moment, just because you don't see much of it.
You don't, do you, at the moment? Yeah, because your Random Trials is pretty much American comic book size. Is that right?
It is. Yeah.
Was that a conscious decision to get it on shelves, or did you just like that size? Or
yeah, and I on the first couple, I put the title block up in the top left hand corner so that when they're all shuffled up one behind the other, you can still see the full title block.
Good idea. Yeah. Well,
that's an actual thought behind that.
Yeah.
As we're learning, that's quite a rare thing when it comes to planning this comic book. It
does. Yeah. If anyone comes up and tries to swap you for a mixtape, then I've got a couple of suggestions.
I think he'll be writing some nice things in those speech bubbles if that's the case. So you've got a lot of love to go around then, Dean, would you say?
Definitely. You know that.
That's true. Not now, Dean. Not here.
I have to laugh because at Thought Bubble, you were next to Warwick Fraser Coombe, who does the Revenger book, who I was a little bit scared of speaking to. And to have the two of you sitting there opposite, it was like, I thought it was going to be a tear up any minute.
I've got his book as well. That's in my pile of 56 that I've got to read.
He's a good lad. Yeah, really good.
That's one of Dan's desperate to read.
I really want a copy of that.
Yeah. He reads as a bit like he's perhaps a bit angrier than he is in reality. He's actually a really sweet guy, but I was thinking, do I really want to speak to him? Yeah, this book, But yeah, it should be good.
I think people who write angry stuff aren't normally that angry.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, they're just getting it out there, aren't they?
Put it all down on the pages rather than blood in the streets.
Yeah. Apart from Dan, who's both.
Now, one of the moments I skull mask. One of the things that thought about when I picked up issue 3, I remember you signed your name on my copy, because I always get people to sign their copies, and you put your signature in the O of the Random Trials, and you were so taken back by it, you said, I should start doing that from now on. Have you? Or was that a lie? Are you lying to me, Dean?
I did that, yeah. I did that. It was a Champion idea.
Hey,
yeah.
Oh, that's good.
I did it then on about 150 copies that went out via Kickstarter, and my hand didn't work at the end of that.
Nice one. Well, at least you got that excuse.
These are things that you've got to think of when you say on Kickstarter, I'll send out the comics and I'll sign every single copy that goes out.
Yeah.
That's just another day's work.
Yeah. And also, should you think about signing, where your signature is going to go when you actually design the comic? Like the cover and stuff. So that's one thing about the Red Mask. There's no, I didn't really think about the obvious place of where to sign it. And so when people came up, could you sign it? I thought, where the hell am I going to write my name on this?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
So I've given a little bit more space in issue 2 for it.
Oh, you've got the sparkly pink pen for that now, haven't you?
Yeah.
Most people who I've had sign books just get a big silver pen and just write it smack across the middle of the cover, which I don't mind at all.
Okay.
I like it, but. Yeah, I now do put it in the O of Random, and I probably will forever now.
Hey, I was there at the birth. I feel special now.
Vince, you are special.
Oh, thanks. That was the only reason I got you on this show. So that
point out that moment.
Show off. Yeah.
Show off me? Never. So can you get Random Trials just from conventions, or you've got a big cartel, haven't you? Where can people get Random Trials? Which everyone should.
Yeah, Big Cartel, and I think I've still got it on my own website, deanbeattie.com. I think it's on there. I don't update my website very often, just because I'm with a rubbish host, and it's the hoops you have to jump through to do anything. It's absolutely terrible. So Big Cartel is absolutely perfect. Hmm. Does it all for you. Works out all the prestige.
You can get your sketchbooks and stuff from there as well, can't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. I think I'll have to do another sketchbook as well for London.
What a new sketchbook?
I did, yeah. So the one with Deadpool on the cover is just 2015. So I might get a 2016 one done early as well. Because I've done loads of work over Christmas in November. And so all the art rewards and everything that I did for Kickstarter, there's, I think I did about 40 pictures.
Wow.
So
I've got a ton of stuff that needs to go somewhere.
Oh, brilliant.
What conventions are you doing? You do DemonCon generally, don't you, as well? Have you got any other ones you want to talk about? Or?
I think I might only do the big ones this year.
Right.
I might just do London and Thought Bubble.
Okay.
And that's it.
Not doing DemonCon, no, because I know that's local to you, isn't it? Or
it's just down the road, but it's been it's very quiet. I kind of know the date, but there's been no instructions come out about it, so it's a little bit up in the air at the moment, I think.
Right. Okay.
I don't think anyone knows what's happening.
Right. Okay, dude. Yeah. But
other than that, I just I have been spending a lot of money on tables and travel and hotels and things, and I think the new crowd at conventions tend to be families that want to spend about 50p or a pound. So,
or you get some cheeky kid that comes up to your table and say, "What's the cheapest thing on your table?"
And you say, "Tony."
A clip round the ear's free.
No, I do find it weird. I do think at the moment it's that conventions are picking up in popularity with people who aren't particularly interested in comics.
Yeah.
Because of all the films and things like that. So a lot of people that come through the door and are walking around in convention halls have no real interest in buying comics. But the organisers because they're getting more people through the door, they know they're getting more popular, so they're charging more for tables and things like that. And
Yeah.
So it's not good for the creators because they're spending more to be there, but they're not actually making any more money.
Right.
Yeah. And okay. I think that's going to reach a point where a few more people just stop doing them. I think people are going to choose much more carefully about which conventions they actually go to.
I have heard some people sort of say, I'm cutting back on what I do next year. I believe Tom Ward and Chris Welsh said they were cutting back, but that was fairly easy anyway because I think they did everything in 2015. They even did one in Holland. So So I think when you do everything, you can cut the wheat from the chaff, can't you? Really, you can just think, well, you know, I'm not driving 5 hours there again because I only sold one comic.
Yeah. But presumably there'll be people to get tables because there's people like always wanting tables at comic things.
Mm.
So I don't know how that works.
We've talked about it before. I mean, it's so popular at the moment, isn't it? The small press, and I think Comic Con is a brand now. People don't automatically connect it with having to do with effing comics, do they?
You know,
everyone thinks it's Game of Thrones cosplay and Pikachu or something, you know.
Mm. That's just you.
Yeah, I'll do both. Combine them.
I think it's a good thing that there are more people there. It's just that a lot of the people that are turning up now just want their pictures taken with a Dalek.
Yeah.
So sitting there, and then the Dalek's going to stop in front of your table so no one can actually see your comics. And
Well, if we see a Dalek in front of your table at London, Dean, we'll take it out.
Yeah,
if there's
I want to see what you write.
A Dalek in front of my table, it won't be there long.
I remember doing DemonCon, and there was the Darth Vader 50. Were they called the 501 something or other?
501st Battalion. I think that's it.
Yeah, and they were doing some play acting thing, and it was all very uncomfortable and. And I felt, just get out of the way. I want to look at this box of comics, you know. Yeah.
I think they're fantastic outfits. I mean, I really can appreciate the people that put time and effort into what they're doing. I think it's really good that they are that creative. But then at the same time, there's another 200 people there that have bought a costume out of Argos.
Yeah.
And they're just walking around chatting about nothing. I don't like them.
that went downhill quick.
Yeah. I just don't like them.
And you've got a very understanding partner, haven't you? Because you drag Victoria around to a lot of conventions. How did she find it all? Did she enjoy being there, or
she loves the social side of it?
Right. Okay.
She gets a bit bored. She has a look around, and if there's jewellery and T-shirts to buy, she's quite happy for an hour or so, and then gets a bit bored. And at Thought Bubble a couple of years ago, she did actually go to sleep under my table.
That was while I was talking to you, probably.
Yeah, it was, yeah. No, she just curled up in a little ball underneath the table and went to sleep, and...
Yeah,
I think that's how she feels most of the time. But she's never read a comic.
I think she quite liked being the judge a couple of years ago on Shit Comic of the Year that we had a competition. I think in the Pizza Express, didn't she?
Yes, anyway, she did love that.
Yeah,
she. You know, if there's anything she loves doing, it's giving her opinion.
There's a nice sense of bitterness to that.
Yeah.
She's not going to listen to this, is she, Ding?
No.
Oh, please, we need the listeners.
Yeah. No chance. No, but that last at Thought Bubble just a couple of months ago, she enjoys Thought Bubble the most because it is the most social thing, because everyone has to travel there and everyone has to stay over.
Yeah.
So it is a big Saturday night. And did a quiz this year.
Yeah, I missed that this year because I went to that engagement thing. Yeah, I was most disappointed. I heard it was very good. Yeah,
it was. If I say so myself, it was bloody awesome. I've got next year's one half written already.
Oh, blimey!
Yeah,
get back to making the comic. Don't worry about a bloody pub quiz.
Yeah. Are you staying over at London? Or are you driving backwards and forwards?
No, it's only about 40 minutes away for me.
Of course it is. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a nice little drive.
Yeah.
And go in there, do the day, then come out in the evening and walk into one of the pubs, and there seems to be more people in one of those pubs than there was in the actual XL Centre. They're the most packed pubs ever.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I wonder if there's more cosplayers outside of some of these events than there are actually wandering the aisles. Yeah. Especially the MCMs.
MCMs. It's like everyone seems to be congregating outside.
Yeah.
So they don't buy tickets, do they?
Some of them don't. I think you're right. Yeah.
But MCM a couple of years ago said that they were going to try and police the whole area, and you had to have a ticket even to be on the green outside the XL Centre.
All right. Yeah.
But obviously they couldn't police that. So
no. Yeah. Have you done the MCM scene or?
I did the MCM once in my first year of doing conventions. I did London once. And I sat next to a lovely girl. She was lovely. She was only maybe 16 or 17. But she had a queue of people stretching for miles. And she was charging 50p or a pound for a sketch.
Oh, no.
Okay.
And I just realised it wasn't the place for me. There were loads of 14-year-old cosplayers in there as anime characters. I didn't know who anyone was.
Yeah.
Loads of people walking around with free hug signs that I just wanted to smash. So, I don't think...
Is that an anime? Excuse me for being an idiot, but you see them all the time. Is that some anime character, is it? Free hugs?
No idea. I think it's just an annoying kid thing. They just want some physical contact, don't they? They've never had any. They free hugs, and you just, you know, I'll give you some physical contact, you twat. I do remember that I've been to MCM as a punter a couple of times. I remember going with Dave Stokes once, and a girl coming up to him with a free hug sign on, just putting her hands out, and her him going, "No."
I think we need to start a hashtag, sort of, or maybe a petition to try and get Dave on this show. because I keep saying to him, you're coming on. No, I'm not. Almost now when I walk up to him, keep away. He's like, keep away from me. He's like...
he's not the only person that does that, though.
Yeah, that
he?
Does hang on a lot, to be fair.
Yeah. Wait 6 months or a year and he'll be famous then.
He will be, won't he? Yeah, he should be famous now. Yeah.
Well, he should be famous now.
Yeah, he's a good artist, isn't he?
For being a tope, the biggest twat in the country.
He told me off on Twitter once for calling him gangster. He says, can you not call me gangster on Twitter, please?
did he say it that nicely, though?
Pretty much, yeah. He's got a nice way about him, you know.
He has got a gangster streak.
There is yeah.
He's from Barking, so he's grown up with a gangster streak in him.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, dear. No, I think he is going to do something big shortly, and he's just I think he just needs to be kicked in the arse every single day until it happens.
Yeah, we'll definitely get him on then.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah.
Do it. Do a before and after.
Good idea. Well, we'll do a before and then he'll never come back, will he?
That'll be the after.
Yeah. You and him did a drink and draw. You organised a drink and draw. What's that? A couple of years ago now, isn't it?
Yeah. That was... we didn't really know what we were doing. We just thought we'd want to get together and have a lot of people draw. But it didn't quite go to plan.
No. It's not too bad.
Why not? Because I've thought about doing one locally near me, and I thought, well, how do you go about planning it? Because surely it's just, here's a venue, turn up with a pad, order a drink, and then get drawing. Is there much organisation in it?
Well, there was for us, because we were doing it in London, and we had to find a pub that had tables where you could actually sit and draw. So that cut it down to only a few pubs. And then there was
you have to keep it central as well, don't you, really, for people travelling in.
Yeah.
And there were space limitations. So the people said, you know, the pub owners said, well, we can only have 25 up here. So we had to kind of invite people, but limit it at the same time.
Right.
Oh, shit.
So there were loads of... I would love to do another one, because I do really enjoy him, but I think that it would be entirely different from that first one.
Right, okay. Mm. Yeah.
It would be more... I'd just find a pub and just have people barrel in there with pads and things might be better.
Yeah, I think once you establish one, some of them are like weekly or bi-weekly, aren't they, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think once you get that sort of rolling crowd, then the pub doesn't mind as much, do they?
Yeah.
They're not taking a chance on money behind the bar and stuff like that, you know, because it's just a little area put aside sometimes.
Yeah.
That's it. Orbital started doing them, didn't they?
Is it Gosh?
Oh, Gosh.
I think Orbital have done some, but they do like drawing classes, don't they, I think? And I think Gosh have started a couple, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I've not been to any. I've not been an artist. I've not really... I came to yours because it was a laugh, but yeah, I've not been to those ones yet.
No, I haven't. I think that they had a pub which wasn't really prepared for people sitting down and drawing or anything.
Yeah.
And that's what we tried to avoid with owls. So we'd spent a day going around looking for pubs where we could sit down.
Yeah.
But yeah, didn't quite work how we wanted it to. I wanted everyone to get really, really drunk and just draw penises or
or draw around their penises.
Yeah.
Which would have been just as good.
Yeah, that's what was working towards, yeah.
The pad's not big enough.
It's far too big.
Is there anything smaller than A6?
Oh dear!
Just hand out post-it notes.
Yeah. These are for the penis drawings.
Yeah. I've got an idea for our table at London now. Yep.
Yeah. Oh God.
Right. It's behind the curtain.
If anyone out there has done a drink and draw, because this is something that we haven't spoken about on this show before, and I know a lot of these things happen all over the country, get in touch and let us know how to do these things. Who knows? We might actually organise one of these days.
Yeah,
do it.
Yeah.
And we'll invite everyone. Well,
do it.
See, they should combine them with conventions, you know, like Leamington or someone like that should have an after hours.
It's a shoo-in, isn't it? It's, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you've got a lot of artists who are staying there, some people just pop up for the day. I think if it's a 2-day convention, you're probably more likely to do it. I think if it's a 1-day convention, a lot of people will turn up and then go home straight after as well.
Yeah, I'm surprised that Thought Bubble don't do one. I mean, we'd ask them, but mostly they just ignore us, don't they? when we email them.
Yeah. Yeah. One day we'll
Have the big party, well, don't they, at Saw Bubble?
Yeah. Don't go to that.
I haven't been to that for a couple of years, but it must be the pressure to put that on for people. I think that it's got bigger and bigger and bigger, so there must be quite a lot of pressure on them to put on a decent event for people, and they can't then branch out and do a drink and draw as well.
They can't keep everyone happy, can they? I think that party almost caters to the mixtape crowd, doesn't it? You know, for me.
Oh my word. There's a statement.
Retro DJs. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Where is the what was the name? The eyebrow.
Oh, Oscillating Eyebrow.
Oscillating Eyebrow. If Oscillating Eyebrow aren't there, then I'm not gonna go.
Yeah, if Oscillating Brow is listening to us, would you please send us a mixtape?
Yeah.
We'd love to hear what it says. Yeah. Okay.
If we had a band like that, Tony, or Dan, what would we call them?
Interesting.
Undulating Gland?
Tony's Dinosaur?
Oh. not again.
We'd have to be called the Peach Stones. It could be like a...
but then we'd have to be some sort of, like, I don't know, a female sort of singing group. Do you know what I mean? That's
Tony,
like...
and the Peach Stones.
Tony and the Peach Stones.
Oh, dear.
I think you're missing out on the fact there's three of you and you could play on that. You could be the Twig and Berries.
That would be our pub.
Yeah. Obviously, there'd be fights over who was the twig.
It varies from week to week, to be fair.
Well, who's the cock on the show? I think generally it's me, isn't it? To be fair.
Oh dear.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, thank you for joining us, Dean. Obviously you were with us for the rest of the show, but that was we know so much more about you now.
That was good. Yeah, even I learned some things and I've known you for years.
Yeah. I know not to upset you.
Yeah. Smash you up. Don't ask for a hug off Dean.
Oh no, I'm not gonna ask. He's just gonna get one.
Yeah.
I'll hug anyone as long as they're not wearing a costume. That's not true at all.
Yeah. Wait till Harrow asks for a hug. You know he'll get one. Vampirella costume.
Yeah.
Put him in a leotard. We've got a deal.
Did everyone? I met Matt and Mark and Alex today for lunch. Did everyone see what Matt texted me? Did you see that on Twitter today? I've got like a Pebble watch. I'm very proud of it.
Oh yeah.
I don't really understand how it works, but I was showing Matt it, and he was going, "Oh, that's interesting." And then I got a text from him on my watch that just said, "Twat watch."
Not a fan.
Yeah.
Oh dear. That was also an alternative name for this show, but we decided not to.
Twat watch. Yeah, it could be like Crime Watch.
Crime Watch.
Kim Peel for twats.
Anyway, shall we get on to the events?
Okay.
Yes, what have we got, Tony?
There's quite a few actually coming up now. We're back. I know we bemoaned the fact that it was we were out of season, and we're back. Seems apparently we're back in season again. That came around quickly. 23rd of January is the Geekaboo Comic Mart. Anyone ever heard about that? It's the Glasgow Comic Mart.
No,
I've not heard of it either. It's at 74 the High Street in Glasgow, and it's at it is Jim Alexander, and his name is Ed Murphy, believe it or not, are launching the new Planet Jimbot book called Good Cop, Bad Cop, which is Volume 3. It's just about to come out. First of a three-issue miniseries, which I got to review this week, and it was really good, with art by Aaron Murphy. So that's the 23rd of January between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m.
On a side note, that Good Cop, Bad Cop, that stole a title for a comic that I wanted to do for years.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, I had that name. I had that name, and I thought, this is going to be brilliant. And then it was taken, and I was like, fucking hell.
It's actually quite good. Yeah, really, really good stuff.
Yeah, it looks like a good book. Yeah.
Glasgow noir mixed with a bit of sort of Twin Peaksy type stuff. Yeah, awesome. I'll probably talk about it next week, actually.
Awesome.
5th of February, between 7 and 9 p.m., is the Singing Dragon launch party at GOSH, which is 1 Berwick Street, Soho. And they'll be launching some books or launching at the party some books that we've talked about. Take it as a compliment by Maria Stowen. And Steve Haynes and Sophie Standing's books, Pain is Really Strange and Trauma is Really Strange, which they're a worthy company, and they're putting out some really great stuff now. That's the 5th of February, 7 to 9. The 6th of Feb is the True Believers Comic Festival at Cheltenham Racecourse. Are you going to that one, Vince here.
I have a table there, yes, as does my usual table mate, Sean Dobie, Descending Outlands will be there. We've got individual tables, but next to each other, holding hands, and generally playing sweet, sweet music to each other.
Yeah, well, I think I might pop to that, actually. It sounds good.
Oh, God, right. I'm cancelling my table.
Guests at that are Tim Quinn, who, if you get a chance to listen to, is a really funny guy. John Paul Bove, who we've met before, Kate Brown, Rob Williams, who's doing some great work for 2000 AD, and good old Mike Collins, the Doctor Who storyboard artist, amongst many other things. 14th of February, I know you'll be busy, Dan, romancing, but it's 11 a.m.
Hey, I'm quite a romantic soul.
Are you?
No.
Tumbleweed. it's DIY art market, which is at Epic, which is 13 to 15 Stoke Newington High Road. It's hackneyfleamarket.com, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. At it are some of our favourites: Avery Hill, Mike Medaglia, Catriona Chapman, Amber Hasu, who's there as Tiny Pencil, Gareth Brooks, and Eyeball Comics are going to be there. So it's a sort of arty, sort of hipster type one. And then the 20th and 21st of February is what we've talked about, London Super Comic Con at the XL Centre in the East End of London. At it are the pro guests include CB Sabowski, Frank Cho, who I'm really looking forward to seeing, Humberto Ramos. Marv Wolfman's going to be there. That's going to be interesting. I really want to meet him. Mm. Mike Zeck, we've talked about and we love. David Arger, Howard Chaykin, he's back for his second year running, I think. Duncan Fogredo, who we're obviously big fans of and pals of. Gary Frank, Tom Palmer, Yannick Paquette, who's superb, really love his stuff. Small Press, you've got Marcosia, Aces Weekly, we'll hear a bit more about in a minute. Astral, Gypsy, Dead Canary Comics, Diego Publishing, Orangutan Comics, T-Pub, Anastasia Catris is there, Dean, you're there, Fly Comics, Lou Scannon, Rachel Smith, Adam Cadwell, Heart of Time, Big Punch, lots and lots and lots of people. Get tickets to LondonSuperComicConvention.com. That's it for the events. So there's loads more coming. I just limited myself to February on them, but there's a lot more coming up.
Very wise, Tim.
Yeah. There you go.
Do we have any shout-outs?
I do for Doc Dino Kickstarter.
Yes.
There's only 11, well, by the time you listen to this, 11 days to go. By Tom Ward and Chris Walsh, they kind of start putting your money in for that. It looks like it's going to be a great project, great comic.
Yeah, they need your love. So anyone who hasn't checked out Doc Dino, which was an exclusive on episode 2, the announcement of that.
It was, so, wasn't it? Yeah. Mm,
yeah.
Did he draw it on a pizza box or something like that?
It was a drunken drawing on a pizza box, which is turning into a 68-page original graphic novel. So, thing of beauty. It's a T-Rex. Brilliant. It's a T-Rex who's the best surgeon in the world on paper. and it's a medical drama. So, you know, what's not to love? So, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely got to give a shout-out to our usuals, A Place to Hang Your Cape. Good friends of the show. We're going to be doing some more stuff with them over the year. If you like superheroes and anything superheroic, which we do on this show, as well as the crazy madness that we normally talk about, but we love our superheroes, don't we?
We do, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We do indeed. So AP2HYC, you can go, there's loads of articles, reviews of your best comic book show, etc. And they're just great guys. And
ran an interesting article by the chap who runs that T-Pubs about marketing and selling your comic. That's worth reading the article.
Oh, nice.
Because he sells a shitload of stuff. I think he does it professionally, but he's got some good tips.
Yeah. It's a good site because it's not just, you know, this is what we've been watching on TV, this is what we're watching in the movies. Yeah, they do that, but they also do articles like that, and they show love to Small Press as well. So, you know, if you've got anything that might be up their street, get in touch with them, because they're great. As will pipedreamcomics.co.uk, if you like your comics digitally. They've just done a poll of 2015, if I believe correctly. So there's lots of stuff on there. I know some of our listeners and stuff have got in touch with their comics and had them reviewed and stuff. They do a lot on Comixology, sequential, anything digital, rather than the hard copies, print format and stuff. So one day, Dean, in the future, when you're on the digital realm, they'll be gushing
about cyberspace.
Oh, his enthusiasm is palpable. So pipedreamcomics.co.uk, friends of the show, as is everyone, because we love everyone. Oh dear. So yeah, well, no, especially Dean, bloody hell. Especially if you're if you're a Dalek, Jesus.
Smash you in your Dalek face.
Yeah, and all the Dalek would be going, I just wanted a hug.
Oh no.
The impressions have started.
Yeah.
That sounded like 22. My impression of you last week. Everyone be quiet. Everyone be quiet.
Oh dear God. Right.
There must be a lot of photos out there of Daleks at conventions, but no one's got a photo of a Dalek that's been knocked over with a bloke crawling out from underneath it, have they?
We need that.
Yeah. Oh, we need that. Well,
that's what people should be looking for.
Yeah.
I remember years ago, do you remember, anyone remember John Pertwee when he was Doctor Who? One of his companions, I won't say her name, she appeared, I think she must have left the show and maybe, I'm going to guess, maybe fallen on hard times, but she appeared in a magazine naked with a Dalek.
Okay.
Right.
Does anyone remember that? But anyway, I met her in a, I've been to a sort of function, a sort of talk about Doctor Who, and she came backstage and I was chatting to her, and me and my friend were chatting to her about Doctor Who episodes and ones that had the Daleks in, and she looked at me and she went, I just love the Daleks. And I looked back at her into her eyes and she knew that I knew. That's my mate Lenin. Nice. My mate Lenin and went, we know you do. And
No, she knows. Yeah. A smile forwards for a second.
Yeah, and now we're married.
You are the Dalek.
Yeah.
Right, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Shall we go to the recommendations, Tony?
Okay, mine is from an email that came in from a guy who's listening, a guy called Simon Russell, top bloke. He describes himself as the Mac Monkey for Aces Weekly, which we mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And he listened to the one we talked about, Herb Trimpey. We talked about the Two Morrows book on him, and he really liked it, and he's a big fan of Herb Trimpey. And he sent us in his comic. It's called Nearly Maids. It's the sort of subtitle is A Smattering of Found Stories and Kipple Narratives. It's basically a series of images that are both from nature and from just walls and countrysides and all over the place, are very, very abstract, and he plays about a bit with the light and the shading and the texture of the picture, but he adds words and passages and poetry to each image, and often they're at contrast to the image. It's like a knot in a bit of wood that looks a little bit like a sort of planet, if that makes sense. Underneath it's something that's a complete contrast to what you expect the image to relate to. It's very clever. I think I said last week I was never a big fan of the abstract, but my eye is becoming more acquainted to it, I think, and I'm beginning to enjoy it a lot more. And like this, just bits of discarded paper that are referred in, and underneath is a line that refers to Norse mythology, and it's got this sort of humorous but sort of gentle and hugely interesting style to it that he describes as found comics. It sounds a bit esoteric and a bit arty-farty, but it's not. It's actually really nice. So his name is Simon Russell. You can buy it. It's £9. You can find him at boinggraphics.co.uk and find him at, on Twitter and have a look at some of his stuff. It's really good. He's at Simon_at_boing, B-O-I-N-G. Mm-hmm. Really good, really fun, and I really liked it. And I know I sent it to you two guys. You need to have a look at it. It's
cool.
Quite beautiful. Yeah, very much so.
I know he wrote a wonderful email.
So he did, really nice email, yeah. And we've emailed backwards and forwards a little bit recently about, and he sent me one today that said he goes down the gym and sort of works out, and he's been laughing at the podcast. Yeah, really nice of him. Thanks for listening a lot as well. Good.
Nice. What about you, Dan?
I'd mentioned briefly before Christmas, I did a little bit of work for the Assault on Fortress Doom.
Yeah.
Yeah, the book came through a couple of days ago. It's great. It's absolutely ace. Okay. I hold my hand up. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but it kind of looks a kind of Dirty Dozen take on the kind of the Guns of Navarone style kind of scenario. It looks like a lot of fun. So hopefully we'll maybe get in touch with Lex and see if he can, he's up for coming on the show.
Yeah, I had a chance to talk to him at Thought Bubble, actually. Really great guy. So yeah, and it looks like a great book. So
yeah.
Yeah,
his whole experience of kind of running a Kickstarter as well would be
okay.
Good to hear.
Ah, awesome. What's the finish of the book like?
That's great. It's actually A4 size. We were talking about earlier. You don't see a lot of that. But
oh, nice.
It's kind of like, yeah, A4 size, glossy, like high grade paper. Yes, yeah, really good. Really nice printing on it.
That's ruined it for me. I'm going to have to go A2 now.
Let's go AO.
Bloody hell.
Go interpretive theatre.
just do a mixtape.
Yeah. And then throw it at someone with a free hug sign.
I could just save time, not get it printed, just punch everyone that comes to the table.
Yeah. Rather than random trials, it can just be random thoughts of violence.
Yeah, random violence.
Yeah. Table, punch them, tell them to fuck off and ask them for £3.
Well, it's better than some tables you find at conventions, yeah, to be fair. Yeah.
We just want to say this. Dean Beattie is in no way affiliated with the Awesome Comics Podcast.
Yes, he is.
And if you see... No, seriously though, folks, he is nice when you talk to him in real life, I swear. No, he's not.
I'm not this miserable always. Sometimes I go to sleep.
We wouldn't have had you on here if you weren't a little bit spicy. Right, yeah, Assault on Fortress Doom. Yeah, that's definitely one that I want to check out because the book looks really nice. Do you know if you can get it anywhere else yet, or is it just a Kickstarter reward?
I don't know, actually.
We'll have to figure that out. And right. If I can, I'll put it on the show notes. Mm. So, yeah, I just want to give a shout-out to the guys at Disconnected Press.
Okay.
I know they listen to the show, and they're small press veterans. They've been around for a while. Lizzie and Connor Boyle. I actually want to recommend their anthologies, Disconnected, of which there's 3 volumes. I think the first volume is out of print. And they're quite dark stories, lots of different types of things. I'm just going to read from the inside cover of Volume 3. The challenge is always broad. It's a setting, not a genre or a style. And yet, in each issue, themes emerge. In Disconnected 1, our creators explored the judgments we make about each other and the demons that we carry with us. In Disconnected 2, our creators forced us to think about the frustrations of small-town life, dreams of escape, and where the roads we choose may lead. Here in Disconnected 3, we seem to be drawing on secrets, the things that lie beneath the surface of the everyday, the monsters under the bed, the demons behind the door, the Tonys behind wherever you are. That's not actually in the book. But yeah, they're great anthologies, these. I mean, I know you said before, Tony, that anthologies are the lifeblood of small press comics, and these guys are putting out high-quality ones. I mean, they've got creators such as PM Buchan, was it? Yeah. Buchan, Martin Simmons, John Locke, Sarah Jones. They've got Owen Johnson, Verity Glass, Mike Garley. Mike Garley, yeah. Peter Mason, Max Deacon, and Lizzie and Connor do stories in their anthology as well. And they're all brilliant stuff. You know, they're very dark. Some of them are dark, twisted. Some of them are very autobiographical. But everyone has a punch to it. Everyone will get you in some way. I've got volume 2 and volume 3. Hopefully there's a volume 4 on the way in the future. They also, they've entirely worked on things like sentient zombie space pigs. I've ranted about that before. And they put out a trade called Cross, which is a political satire anthology. This time working with people like Rob Williams, Mary Talbot, PJ Holden, Emma Beebe, and loads more. And that one, okay. they did that one around the time of the election, so it's very poignant. I think in these political times, stuff like that's always quite poignant. Even though I'm about as political as a block of soap. So
right on, brother.
Yeah. Only I don't get used as much. So Disconnected Press, you can check out their website, disconnectedpress.wordpress.com. If you see them at a convention, go up and say hello, because they're like two of the nicest people ever. Lizzie's always normally talking to the public, and Connor's normally bent over doing work, and just he's constantly drawing and sketching. So yeah, great. Hopefully I'll get to see them in the next couple of shows I'm going to. I don't know if they're doing London, but either way, they're flying the small press flag very powerfully. So long may it continue. So and we'll have to get them on at some point. I think we'll be able to talk up a
London's going to be good, you know.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Looking forward to it. Yeah.
Fingers
crossed. Our little announcement.
Oh, well, yeah.
Your little baby, you and Dan.
Yeah, yeah. What are we going to call it, Dan? Our child.
Luton. Luton's a nice first name.
No, no. Just because yours is called Watford. Charing Cross. Let's just call it that. But anyway, what about you, Dean? What would you like to recommend to the people at home?
I would have to say go and dig out Gun Viking. Again, mentioned earlier on. Gun, if you haven't heard of it or seen it before, go and find it, because that's really good. And then the other thing I'm looking forward to in 2016, I don't know actually when it's going to come out. It's just someone I've never met, James Corcoran, is working with Fraser Campbell, who's done a couple of bits I've seen before. And they're putting out a comic called Alex Automatic, which looks really interesting. It's kind of an automaton super spy. It's like a cyborg underneath human flesh. And that there's just bits and pieces on James's Facebook page that look really interesting, looks really different from a lot of stuff out there. But as I say, I don't know when that's coming out. Doesn't say on his Facebook page.
Sounds quite cool, though. Yeah, sounds quite cool. I have to check that out.
Yeah, like but... kind of like Fembots, but slightly less deadly. Right. Without the nipple guns.
Oh, imagine. Yeah.
What do you mean, imagine?
What? I don't think that Viagra's worn off yet.
Imagine not having nipple guns.
Imagine not having them. Kind of world we live in.
What a bland world would that be? I'm slightly scared of where this conversation is going to go next. Yeah. And on that note, I think there's plenty for the first show of 2016, and people have got loads to check out and spend their money on. And random trials, they should definitely buy all of them. Yeah, because we don't have an awards show, but he was one of the highlight. Well, not Dean, because he's as you can tell, he's a horrible human being. But his comic book was.
He's going to hunt you down, man.
And I'll hug him. I'll hug him to death.
Oh dear!
Like a death roll.
And if you see Dave Stokes, give him a hug.
Yes. Okay.
No, seriously,
I'll think
though,
about that.
Yeah, seriously though, check out Dean Beattie's work, Random Trials, and we're looking forward to seeing him at London, aren't we?
Yeah,
that's the next time we'll see each other. We'll all be in the same room together.
Yeah, second time ever.
Yeah,
what a man. I'm going to be there thinking of my best swears as well.
Yeah, in a little notebook. Imagine all if you're in a car swears. Crash on the way there and they find a notebook and he just says things like cock gobble and stuff like that.
Fuck tits.
It'd be like the book from American Psycho, you know, and she's flicking through it at the end. And it's just loads of twisted drawings.
That's issue 4. I might just put a load of filth into a hat and pull out, you know.
Don't say that.
Yeah, one for the kids. That involves the kids, doesn't it? They can pick out their own words. Okay. Great.
Yeah, you want to pull out man spit.
White wee wee. Can I just put that one in? It's one of my favourites. Yeah.
That is both offensive and really immature, Tony.
So what?
You're always walking that tightrope.
It's a thin line.
Yeah, true. And folks, you can tell us about whether we've crossed it or not.
I'll tell you what, why not write in with some swear words of your own? Suggest some swear words for Dean. That'd be good.
Yeah, indeed. You can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, or the real spicy ones you want to send to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if you've got any events or comic books we need to keep an eye out for, then get in touch with us. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod. Check out the Facebook page, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Thank you for listening, whether it be on Podbean, awesomecomics.podbean.com, or on iTunes. I know, Tony, you've been pimping out the iTunes, haven't you?
I worked out how you can tweet it. I was quite pleased with myself. You were quite pleased with me as well. You said well done, didn't you?
Yeah. If you were in the room, I would have patted you on the head. Not after all that Viagra, though. Easy. Thank you for everyone who's listening, no matter where it is, whether it's iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you've listened to us. We truly appreciate each and every one of you.
Big time.
And we've got lots of great guests and big plans lined up for the rest of the year. So thank you for sticking with us for the first 27 episodes.
Yeah.
And there's plenty more to come. Yeah. For all our joking about how the next show is going to be the last one. And yeah. No, we're here for the long run. So, and Dean, you'll probably be coming back when the next issue comes out.
Whoa!
And on
that wasn't like a pre-recorded noise.
On that excited bombshell, where can people follow us on Twitter, Tony?
Ezohyz. Or you can find me down the tubes. There's a couple of previews and reviews going live this week, which are worth a look.
Lots of great stuff on Down the Tubes. Popping down the moment. Yeah, brilliant stuff. Dan.
I'm on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and Vanguard comes off on hiatus on Wednesday, the 6th,
yay,
is it?
Yes. So you're going to be putting us all to shame and making me wonder what the hell am I doing in my life. The amount of work.
Go back to 2 pages a week. So
Jesus.
The rod for my back has been made.
Yeah.
So keep following the show for the next few weeks, because you're going to watch the, like Michael Douglas in Falling Down, like the disintegration of a human being.
He's going to get slowly angrier.
No, seriously though, dude, thoroughly looking forward to getting stuck back into that. So you can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. You can check out my comic, The Red Mask from Mars, at theredmaskfrommars.com. And Mr. Beatty, before we sign off, where can people follow you?
Instagram, Dean Beatty. Not so active on Twitter, but I'm on there as Dean Beatty as well.
Nice. And your website is? Your Big Cartel again?
Oh, God. Big Cartel, it's just Dean Beatty. Everything.
Everything in the world.
Everything is just Dean Beatty.
2016 is Dean Beatty.
Yes.
There you go, folks.
Or Dean will beat you.
He puts the beat in Beatty.
Beatty.
Right, thanks
for
listening.
I feel so violent now. I'm going to go downstairs and give Victoria a damn good thrashing.
She's going to thrash you.
Yeah, it's going to be the other way round.
That is more likely, yeah.
Right.
Victoria, where are you? Put the kettle on, dear. Yes, dear. Right, thanks for listening, folks.
Definitely.
For the first show. And from Tony, Dan, Dean, and myself, have a brilliant week. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
See you later.
Bye.
Boy, who was that? Was that you, Dean?
Yeah. I'm going to start a rumour that it was you. At the end of the
I always do that.